Good morning. Thanks for coming back. I'm Twanda Black, your host. And if you've never heard of a condition called cardiogenic shock, you're not alone. It's a rare condition usually caused by a severe heart attack. And new research is showing a higher risk of death to patients. Here to explain what can be done about it is interventional cardiologist Dr. Pervez Miraj and Jara Heron, who survived the condition. First of all, good morning to you both.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, Dr. Miraj, what exactly is cardiogenic shock, and how is it different from a heart attack, a regular heart attack?
Sure. So, I'm sure as many people know, a heart attack is a pretty severe chest pain or chest pressure. Mm-hmm. We've all seen it on TV, in the movies, and hopefully never experienced it ourselves and not had a family member experience it. But that clutching of the chest, that pressure on the chest, that arm discomfort. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've done really well with taking care of patients with heart attacks. You know, over the last 20 years, they do very well. Patients survive and live their lives normally. But about 1 in 10 of patients with a heart attack actually develop cardiogenic shock. It's the most severe form of a heart attack. When the lack of blood flow to the heart happens, the heart, which is a pump that pumps blood through our body, mm-hmm. becomes weak. And as it becomes weaker and weaker, the pump becomes weaker and weaker. And as that happens, the body just doesn't get enough blood, it doesn't get enough oxygen to really survive, and your body essentially starts shutting down. So it's a really severe heart attack, and the prognosis is very poor. More than half of patients with a cardiogenic shock never make it out of the hospital.
What causes it?
So what causes it really is it's a continuation of heart disease. You know, mm-hmm. typically we'll develop heart disease as we go through life due to not eating healthy or not really exercising the way we do. Over time, that can develop into a heart attack. And as it develops into a heart attack, you know, when heart attacks aren't recognized or picked up right away, the cardiogenic shock can really occur. So most commonly, cardiogenic shock happens because of heart disease, but it doesn't have to happen to people only with heart disease. As Jara will tell you, even normal, healthy, completely functioning people can suddenly develop cardiogenic shock.
Yeah, Jara, survivor, thank God. Tell us your story.
Yes, like Dr. Miraj says, I was in the category of no health issues really whatsoever, no heart disease, none in my family. But shortly after the birth of my sixth child, I suffered a massive heart attack, the result of which needed me to be life-flighted to my local hospital in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I arrived in the cath lab and the cardiologist placed 6 stents into my heart, which allowed blood flow to be restored to and from my heart. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, though, my heart had deteriorated rapidly, and I went into cardiogenic shock. So to paint that picture for you, Tawanda, what that means is my organs completely failed.
Wow.
I had many, many complications in the ICU, mm-hmm. and so the first call of action was to be put on a heart transplant list. I was quickly denied a heart transplant simply because I was too ill and my odds of surviving what I was going through were very slim. So fortunately for me, I was treated with a device called the heart Impella heart pump. Mm-hmm. And this little heart pump allowed my heart muscle to basically recover and rest during this critical time when my body was, in a sense, just failing. So I was able to survive and make it through all of these complications, including an emergency intestinal surgery that I had to undergo while my heart was in such a weakened state.
So how did you recover? What was recovery like?
Well, the heart pump itself really at one point was pumping my heart for me, mm-hmm. and getting oxygenated blood to my body. So I was on a respirator, and then eventually I had a tracheotomy. I was on dialysis.
Wow.
I had everything thrown at me,
wow.
in the ICU that you could mm-hmm. get mm-hmm. To survive. And so that critical time when my heart was so weak, that pump was utilized and allowed me to get through and survive all of those complications.
That is amazing.
It really is.
This is amazing. So did you have another baby after that?
I did have another baby after that. A short time later, I gave birth to our 7th child.
Wow.
Which in itself was amazing. And I actually delivered that child in the same ICU room where I was delivered when I had a heart attack. So
my goodness.
Things have really, truly come full circle for me.
Yes. And so you were like 100% active and doing everything now because you've recovered?
That's right. I work full time. I'm a devoted wife and mother, and I'm a busy, busy lady.
Girl, you are blessed. That is an amazing story. That's an amazing story. So, Dr. Miraj, talk about this. How do you know if you're actually having a cardiogenic shock, or would we even know, rather than just a regular heart attack? How would we know?
So you may or may not know, but I think, you know, it's good to, you know, always go over some of the signs and symptoms. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, heart attack signs and symptoms we all know, but what happens with cardiogenic shock is as your heart pump gets weaker and weaker, you get more short of breath. You can't even walk from your chair to the bathroom in your house. And even sometimes when you're sitting in your chair, you're so short of breath that you're unable to catch your breath. It feels like you're running a marathon when you're really not.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's really an extreme form. Mm-hmm. And the goal always is, you know, I think when patients start having that chest pain, those symptoms of a heart attack is really to seek medical attention right away.
Yes.
Because you don't want to wait until you start having the signs and symptoms of cardiogenic shock to then make a call to EMS or 911, because then you're starting to get too late. And the quicker you get to, you know, qualified medical professionals who can help take care of patients in cardiogenic shock, the quicker you'll get better and the more likely you are to survive and have a great outcome.
May I ask, is, you know, a regular cardiologist, you know, qualified to treat cardiogenic shock, or is that a different kind of doctor?
So really, you know, I think it's very important for all of us to know that, you know, to treat a patient in cardiogenic shock, you really have to be at a very high level heart hospital. And definitely there are cardiologists there, definitely there are interventional cardiologists there, and there are definitely heart failure doctors there.
Okay.
And it's really a team effort between all of the physicians that are there to really take care of the really sick patients. And not all hospitals and not even all heart hospitals really have the ability to take care of patients in cardiogenic shock, because not all heart hospitals have this heart pump. So, you know, part of the recognition, the knowledge is to understand which hospitals in the area actually have the ability to place these heart pumps, because those are the places that you really want to be taken care of in, because those are the places where you're going to have the best outcome.
And that's the Impella, right?
And that's particularly for the Impella device. And
okay.
I think, you know, a lot of the listeners will want to, you know, turn to cardiogenicshock.com, which is a website, which really I think can help understand, help explain, and folks will understand exactly what cardiogenic shock is, what the Impella device and heart pumps can do for you in that setting, what the symptoms are. And like I said, really understand where to go to get managed and taken care of, because that will really help save your life, your family member's life, your loved one's life, and give them the best chance for a full recovery, just like Jarrah's had.
Absolutely. All the best to you, Jarrah, and take care of those kids.
Thank you so much, Wanda.
Interventional cardiologist Dr. Parez Miraj joins us to talk about cardiogenic shock. Cardiogenicshock.com is where you need to go for more information. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Twanda Black, and it is Stroke Awareness Month. Did you know that there are certain zones of the country where people are more prone to having a stroke? Do we live in one of them? Here now to share the stroke zone statistics for our area, to talk about stroke risk factors and the latest treatment advances, is Dr. Vivek Reddy, Director of the Cardiac Arrhythmia Service at Mount Sinai Medical Center. And I already know that Georgia is in that strike zone, right, Doc?
That's right, Twanda. Unfortunately, Georgia is. It's an area where there tends to be higher risk for stroke than other parts of the United States.
Is there a reason for that? Is it our diet? What is it?
Well, it probably is. I mean, the fact is, when you think about risk factors for stroke, let's talk about some of the lifestyle risk factors. So eating poorly, obesity, high alcohol intake, and definitely smoking. These are very important lifestyle risk factors that increase the risk for stroke. And they're also associated, as you know, with other medical conditions, which in turn also increase the risk for stroke. So, for example, high blood pressure, diabetes, and there's a condition, a heart condition, called atrial fibrillation, which substantially increases the risk for stroke, and particularly those strokes that tend to be the most devastating.
So we're going to backtrack a minute. Tell us what stroke is and what does that look like? What are the signs and symptoms?
Sure. So a stroke basically is a condition that describes what happens when the brain doesn't receive enough blood supply. So this can happen in one of two ways, two general ways. The first, the arteries or the blood vessels that supply blood to the heart, to the brain can get acutely blocked by a blood clot. Or there can be a clot that forms in the heart, which then travels in the bloodstream and then again goes to this one of these blood vessels and blocks that blood vessel to the brain. Mm-hmm. When that happens, the brain is not receiving enough blood, and that means that it's not receiving oxygen and other important nutrients, and then that tissue starts to become damaged. And so that is basically what happens in a stroke.
Okay, so tell me what the signs and symptoms are.
Well, with a stroke, there can be a number of different signs. Slurred speech is sort of a classic sign that I think most people know about. You can also have weakness, a sudden weakness, or inability to move part of the body. You can have pain, for example, in the head, or changes in the memory. All these conditions could be representative of an ongoing stroke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if we see somebody having a stroke, or if we think they're having a stroke, what should we do as the bystander, the family member, whoever it is?
Well, again, the most important thing is to get that individual to medical attention. Mm-hmm. Because stroke is a medical emergency. Mm-hmm. The longer you wait, the more brain tissue is basically dying. And the more brain tissue that gets damaged, the bigger the resulting stroke. And, you know, because strokes can vary from something that's very mild,
right,
such as just weakness transiently, mm-hmm, to something that's much more severe, including fatal strokes.
Right, right, right. And we've seen the gamut of them. From mild to fatal, absolutely. Are there new advances in the treatment of strokes?
Sure. I mean, I think the most important thing when you think about stroke is to try to prevent stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And the approach that we've used for a very long time and continue to use are blood thinners.
Mm-hmm.
So you've heard, of course, about Coumadin. Coumadin,
right,
is a blood thinner that has been used for decades.
Mm-hmm.
And there are now some newer blood thinners that can be used. And blood thinners in general work very well, but the problem is that not everybody can tolerate blood thinners. You can have increased risk for bleeding, or you can already have had a bleeding episode. And if you're at increased risk for bleeding, then blood thinners may not be a good option. Now, until recently, we didn't have many options for these kind of patients,
mm-hmm,
but now we have a new device called the Watchman device. The Watchman device is a medical device made by Boston Scientific, a company for whom I consult with.
Mm-hmm.
The device itself is put into the heart, not using the surgical approach, but a catheter approach.
Mm-hmm.
So we take a catheter, go through a vein in the leg, go up into the heart, and then position the device in that part of the heart where the clots tend to form and tend to accumulate. So once the device is placed, clots can't travel past the device into the brain and cause strokes.
It's got to be a tiny device, right?
It is. It's a very small device.
Mm-hmm.
And it's introduced, as I said, through the catheter. So once it's in the heart, then it unfurls. So the overall size is really only about the size of a quarter in diameter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. So how long has that method been out?
Well, it's been studied in clinical trials now for over a decade,
mm-hmm,
and including trials in the United States. And now, when I say now, about a year ago, device was FDA approved, so now we have it as an option for our patients.
Okay. So, you know, you gave us the signs and symptoms, and basically it is the same thing of avoiding becoming a stroke statistic. Don't smoke, don't drink too much alcohol, watch your weight, you know, all of
That's
those
right.
things, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one sort of natural extension of that, of course, is to consult with your physician,
mm-hmm,
your doctor, to see whether or not you're at high risk for stroke. And if you are, what can you do to prevent it from a medical perspective? Particularly if you have atrial fibrillation, should you be on a blood thinner? And if you can't be on a blood thinner, should you have a device like the Watchman device?
Right, right. So where can people go for more information about stroke prevention and available treatment options?
Well, I think, of course, your doctor is the primary source. But beyond that, you can look at the American Heart Association website, or if you're specifically interested in the Watchman device, you can go to that particular website, the watchman.com website.
All right. Dr. Vivek Reddy talking about the stroke zone, and unfortunately, Georgia is in the stroke zone. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us this great information.
Thanks for having me.